joined on Zoom, for those of you who are linked in on your computers, we're able to see and talk with our next guest, which is neat. Those of you who are just listening on the radio will enjoy the whakaaro, no doubt, of Associate Professor Carrie Leonetti from Auckland Law School. Carrie is an internationally recognised expert on the intersection of science and the law. She's certainly interested in the role that culture, social psychology and cognitive processes play in the definition, detection and remedy of miscarriages of justice in the criminal justice system. Now, you may be aware through the news cycle this week that the National Party's proposal to remove good character assessment at sentencing for sexual offenders is highlighting deeper weaknesses in the broader sentencing framework. And many believe that the sentencing reform actually doesn't go far enough. Carrie Leonetti, Associate Professor, is with us from the US. Thank you for joining us today, Carrie. Tēnā koe.
Morena, Dale.
Thank you. Once again, where are you today?
I'm currently serving as the interim director of the Domestic Violence Project at George Washington University. So I'm in Washington, D.C.
It's really cool to talk with you in this way. Thank you for joining us, Carrie. Good character assessment after you've been convicted, I'm assuming, of sexual improprieties and sexual offences. The good character, does it come in once you've been sentenced or before when lawyers have been trying to use it to lessen the sentences for those charged or convicted, Carrie? Where does this sit?
Yes. So under the Sentencing Act, once somebody has been found guilty of an offense, the Act sets out a list of both what are called mitigating and aggravating factors. So mitigating factors indicate that the defendant's conduct warrants a more serious than average or than typical sentence, and mitigating factors would result in a reduction of sentence compared to sort of the baseline average offender. And so under the Sentencing Act, evidence of a defendant's previous good character can be a mitigating factor at sentencing. And in practice, I think evidence of previous good character really just means no prior arrests or convictions. I think we're actually talking about a negative. So the suggestion is that this offense is anomalous because the offender hasn't done anything like it before, hasn't done anything like it before because they've never been convicted of anything like it before.
Thanks, Carrie. It's an election year, so we're seeing different parties jockeying for position and trying to win favour with the voting public. Whilst I accept and perhaps even support the fact that for sexual offences, it's inappropriate to look at that good character used to try and lessen the sentence, I do note that there could be some political motives behind the announcement at this time. Why don't you speak to that for a moment, please?
I mean, I'm generally supportive of this proposed change in the sense that if I have to choose between the status quo or the status quo plus this one change, I choose the status quo plus this one change. I mean, historically, what has been done with this is to draw what I think is a false distinction between someone who has committed a rape and someone who is a rapist. I don't think that's a meaningful distinction. And I certainly don't think it's fair for victims of sexual violence to have to sit through a sentencing proceeding and hear about how somehow their rapist wasn't that bad of a rapist. But as you mentioned, yeah, it's an election year. And I think it's not so much that I'm opposed to this, but the concern that I have is this seems like one very small change to what I think is a much more systematic problem with our sentencing for offenses generally in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
How prevalent is its use in the court system, from your understanding, Carrie?
I mean, I certainly think in the context of sexually violent offences, it's quite prevalent. I think part of what's problematic with sexually violent offences, using this as sexually violent offences, has to do with what we know about the data around prosecution for sexual assaults. So only about 8% of sexual assaults are reported to police. And then only a really tiny percent of those result, I think it's about a third of those, less than a third, result in even a criminal charge. And only about a third of those result in a conviction. So basically fewer than 1% of sexual assaults that occur will ever result in a conviction. And so there's not a lot of mathematical meaningfulness to the fact that somebody doesn't have a prior conviction for sexual assault, because the vast majority of sexual assaults don't result in charges and don't result in sentences. And that's why I'm largely in favor of removing this. I also think there are patterns to who does get charged and who does get convicted, that sort of bake some other kinds of disparities into this system. But I also think this is part of a broader issue we have in New Zealand, that I don't think we have consistent proportionality around our sentencing. I don't think we've thought in a very systematic way about mitigating factors and aggravating factors across all offenses and across all offenders. And even if you think about sort of somebody not having a prior conviction, I don't think the absence of a prior conviction tells us really anything about somebody's personal character, but it does tell you a little something in the context of risk assessment. Somebody we knew had committed 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 rapes across victims, across context, is more likely to reoffend than somebody who's offended once. They're going to be harder to rehabilitate. To me, it's not about good character evidence. It's about actually thinking in a systematic and evidence-based way about risk. And that's the bigger project here. I don't think we use our prisons in a way that's defensible, sort of with social science evidence, in New Zealand. I think there are people who get sentences that are too light. I think there are people who get sentences that are too heavy. I don't think we have a systematic structure for thinking about sentencing at all. And so, yeah, we can remove this one, I think, rather arbitrary mitigating factor in the context of sexual offenses, but it's not really fixing the broader problem that we have.
Thank you. Whilst it's aimed at being used initially with allegations or even convictions of sexual offences, is it the thin end of the wedge? And if so, the use of good character, curious to know about the cultural data and the income data, because it seems that KCs might play this hand more than a legal aid lawyer might. And bearing in mind that Māori males, for instance, a hell of a lot more likely, as you'd be aware, Carrie, of having convictions earlier in life. Whether, while this one is aiming at sexual offences, and I sense that you support it, and many will as well, we've got to be mindful that it could be the precursor to wider reforms that might not allow for others, and in our case, talking about Māori people before the courts, to use these good character tools to try and paint a clearer picture of their realities for those ultimately doing the sentencing.
Yeah, I'm not generally a fan of talking about prior criminal records and equating that with character, because who is policed, who is identified, who is arrested, who is charged has massive socioeconomic and racial impacts. But police will often talk about high crime areas. That's high arrest areas. Those are areas that have a lot of police officers in them. They're not necessarily areas that actually have higher baseline crimes than anywhere else. And again, this to me is just part of this broader problem. One of the ways that I think New Zealand is really out of step internationally with its sentencing is that we don't have a sentencing commission. So a lot of other countries, the United States, Canada, the UK, I think most of the states in Australia, they have these large nonpartisan commissions of experts that generate sort of aggravating and mitigating factors around sentencing that are actually based in evidence. What predicts the likelihood of reoffense? What predicts the likelihood of reform and rehabilitation? And I do think it's noteworthy that, because this is the second reform to the Sentencing Act that this government has proposed. The last one was to cap mitigating circumstances, I think, at 40% reduction over what would have been the sentence overall. So they're only peeling away mitigating factors. They don't seem to be peeling away aggravating factors. And when I look at the Sentencing Act, I just don't think there's a lot of rhyme or reason to any of the aggravating or mitigating factors in terms of why we've chosen these and not others. And I think that's a function of not having a sentencing commission, not having formal sentencing guidelines, instead having a sentencing statute that Parliament promulgates that's sort of nibbled around the edges by the Court of Appeal. There's often battles sort of between what the Court of Appeals thinks is fair and what Parliament thinks is fair. And it's politicized a lot of our sentencing, I think, in a way that's not the most evidence-based way to go about this.
Tēnā koe. Kerry Leonetti is our guest today. You've suggested broader reform is needed. But beyond this specific proposal, Kerry, do you believe there needs to be a fundamental overhaul of how the law responds to sexual offending to better reflect accountability and harm and victim needs? Kōrero mai.
Yes, I absolutely do. I mean, when only 8% of people who are victims of sexual offenses are willing to go to the police, that to me is the canary in the coal mine. That is a sign we have a much broader problem. I think we have, first of all, I think we have a myth around what. Between whom sexual offenses occur, that there are these sort of scary monsters who jump out of the bushes and attack virginal young women when they're walking down the street at night. Most sexual offenses are between people who know each other, people who have personal relationships, and that makes it really complicated to go to the police. And it makes it really complicated to go through the criminal justice system. And I think our criminal justice system is hostile to victims in a lot of ways that make them not willing to come forward and not willing to participate. And so, you know, when we start talking about what we think about at sentencing for a crime that has a less than 1% conviction rate, we're missing the larger picture, which is why are victims unwilling to participate in this system in the first place? Why do we have such a poor response? I mean, I think well over 80% of homicides result in convictions, or at least result in charges, whether they result in a guilty conviction or not. So I do think we need a much bigger overhaul to our system. Again, I mean, this is an improvement over the status quo, but it seems like kind of a tiny, obvious, low-hanging fruit improvement in an election year that's not going to solve some of the more systematic problems.
It's been really interesting, Cordial, and I thank you for sharing it with us through satellite communication today, Kerry. All the best.
Yep.
And neat to have you join us on Zoom. Thank you for your time. And
my pleasure.
Kia ora. Dr. Associate Professor Kerry Leonetti joining us from the US. Thank you.